I think they've had long enough to consider our suggestion, Constable. What's next on the list? Constable Shue leafed through a file of grubby paper and pulled out another sheet. Well, we're down to offences of stealing pennies off blind beggars now, he said. Oh, no, this is a good one. Carrot took the sheet in one hand and a megaphone in the other and raised his head carefully over the edge of the cart. Good morning again, he said brightly. We found another one. Theft of jewellery from...
Yes, yes, we did it, shouted a voice from the building.
Really? I haven't even said when it was yet, said Carrot.
Never mind, we did it. Now, can we come out, please?
There was another sound behind the voice. It sounded like a low, continuous growl. I think you ought to be able to tell me what you stole, said Carrot.
Rings. Gold rings?
Sorry, no rings mentioned.
Pearl necklace. Yes, that's what it was.
Getting warmer, but no.
Earrings?
Ooh, you're so close, said Carrot encouragingly.
A crown, was it? Maybe a coronet?
Carrot leaned down to the constable. Says here a tiara, Reg. Can we let that... He stood up.
We're prepared to accept coronet. Well done.
He looked down at Constable Shue again. This is all right, isn't it, Reg? It's not coercion, is it? Can't see how it can be, Captain. I mean, they broke in. They took a hostage. I suppose you're right.
Please, no. Good boy, down.
Seems to be about it, sir, said Reg Shue, peering around the edge of the cart. We've got them down for everything but the Hyde Park flasher.
We did that, screamed someone.
And that was a woman.
We did it!
This time the voice was a lot higher.
Now, please, can we come out?
Carrot stood up and raised the megaphone. If you gentlemen would care to step out with your hands up...
Are you joking?
Whimpered someone against a background of another growl. Well, at least with your hands where I can see him.
You bet, mister.
Four men stumbled out into the street. Their torn clothing fluttered in the breeze. The apparent leader pointed an angry finger back at the doorway as Carrot walked towards them.
The owner of that place ought to be prosecuted, he shouted. Keeping a wild animal like that in his strong room is disgraceful. We broke in perfectly peacefully, and it just attacked us for no reason at all.
You shot at Constable Shue here, said Carrot.
Only to miss? Only to miss?
Constable Shue pointed at the arrow sticking into his breastplate.
Right where it shows, he complained. It's a welding job and we have to pay for our own armour repairs, and there'll always be a mark, you know, no matter what I do.
Their horrified gaze took in the stitch marks around his neck and on his hands, and it dawned on them that although the human race came in a variety of colours, very few living people were grey with a hint of green.
Here, you're a zombie.
That's right, kick a man when he's dead, said Constable Shue sharply.
And you took Corporal Angua hostage, a lady, said Carrot, in the same level voice.
It was very polite, but it simply suggested that somewhere a fuse was burning, and it would be a good idea not to wait for it to reach the barrel.
Yeah, sort of, but she must have got away when that creature turned up.
So you left her in there, said Carrot, still very calm. The men dropped to their knees. The leader raised his hand imploringly.
Please, we're just robbers and thieves. We're not bad men.
Carrot nodded to Constable Shue. Take them down to the yard, Constable.
Right, said Reg.
There was a mean look in his eye as he cocked his crossbow.
I'm down $10 thanks to you, so you better not try to escape.
No, sir, not us.
Carrot wandered into the gloom of the building. Fearful faces peered out of doorways. He gave them a reassuring smile as he walked towards the strong room. Corporal Angua was adjusting her uniform.
I didn't bite anyone before you start, she said, as he appeared in the doorway. Not even flesh wounds. I just tore at their trousers. And that was no bed of roses, I might add.
A frightened face appeared around the door.
Ah, Mr. Vortin, said Carrot. I think you will find that all is in order. They seem to have dropped everything.
The diamond merchant looked at him in amazement.
But they had a hostage.
They saw the error of their ways, said Carrot.
And there were snarling noises, sounded like a wolf.
Ah, yes, said Carrot.
Well, you know, when thieves fall out, which was no kind of explanation, but because the tone of voice suggested that it was, Mr. Vortin accepted it as such for fully 5 minutes after Carrot and Angua had left.
"Well, that's a nice start to the day," said Carrot.
"Thank you, yes, I wasn't hurt," said Angua. "It makes it all seem worthwhile, somehow. Just my hair messed up and another shirt ruined."
"Well done.
Sometimes I might suspect that you don't listen to anything I say," said Angua.
"Glad to hear it," said Carrot.
The entire watch was mustering. Vimes looked down at the sea of faces. "My gods," he thought, "how many have we got now? A few years ago you could count the watch on the finger of a blind butcher's hand, and now there's more coming in." He leaned sideways to Captain Carrot.
"Who are all these people?"
"Watchmen, sir. You appointed them."
"Did I? I haven't even met some of them."
"You signed the paperwork, sir, and you sign the wage bill every month."
"Eventually." There was a hint of criticism in his voice. Vimes' approach to paperwork was not to touch it until someone was shouting, and then at least there would be someone to help him sort through the stacks.
"But how did they join?"
"Usual way, sir. Swore 'em in, gave 'em each a helmet."
"Hey, that's Red Shoe. He's a zombie. He falls to bits all the time."
"Very big man in the undead community, sir," said Carrot.
"How come he joined?"
"He came round last week to complain about the watch harassing some bogeyman, sir. He was very, vehement, sir, so I persuaded him that what the watch needed was some expertise, and so he joined up, sir."
"No more complaints?"
Twice as many, sir. All from the undead, sir, and all against Mr. Shoe."
"Funny, that." Vimes gave his captain a sideways look.
"He's very hurt about it. He says he's found that the undead just don't understand the difficulties of policing in a multi-vital society, sir."
"Good gods," thought Vimes. "That's just what I would have done. But I'd have done it because I'm not a nice person."
"Carrot is a nice person. He's practically got medals for it. Surely he wouldn't have..."
And he knew that he would never know. Somewhere behind Carrot's innocent stare was a steel door.
"You enrolled him, did you?"
"No, sir, you did. You signed his joining orders and his kit chitty and his posting orders, sir."
Vimes had another vision of too many documents hurriedly signed. But he must have signed them, and they needed the men, true enough. It was just that it ought to be him who... "And anyone of sergeant rank or above can recruit, sir," said Carrot, as if reading his mind. "It's in the general orders, page 22, sir, just below the tea stain."
"And you've recruited how many?"
"Oh, just one or two. We're still very short-handed, sir."
"We are with Reg. His arms keep falling off."
"Aren't you going to talk to the men, sir?"
Vimes looked at the assembled, well, multitude. There was no other word. Well, there were plenty, but none that it would be fair to use. Big ones, short ones, fat ones, troll ones with the lichen still on, bearded dwarf ones, the looming pottery presence of the golem Constable Dorful, undead ones, and even now he wasn't certain if that term should include Corporal Angua, an intelligent girl and a very useful wolf when she had to be. Waifs and strays, Colon had said once. Waifs and bloody strays, because normal people wouldn't be coppers. Technically, they were all in uniform, too, except that mostly they weren't wearing the same uniform as anyone else. Everyone had just been sent down to the armory to collect whatever fitted, and the result was a walking historical exhibit. Funny-shaped helmets through the ages.
Ladies and gentlemen, he began.
"Be quiet, please, and listen to Commander Vimes," bellowed Carrot.
Vimes found himself meeting the gaze of Angua, who was leaning against the wall. She rolled her eyes helplessly.
"Yes, yes, thank you, Captain," said Vimes.
He turned back to the massed array of Ankh Morpork's finest. He opened his mouth. He stared. And then he shut his mouth, all but a corner of it. And he said out of that corner,
"What's that little lump on Constable Flint's head?"
"That's probationary Constable Buggy Swires, sir. He likes to get a good view."
"He's a gnome."
"Well done, sir. Another one of yours."
"Ours, sir," said Carrot, using his reproachful voice again.
"Yes, sir. Attached to the Chitterling Street station since last week, sir."
"Oh, my gods," murmured Vimes.
Buggy Swires saw his stare and saluted. He was 5 inches tall. Vimes regathered his mental balance. The long and the short and the tall, waifs and strays, all of us.
"I'm not going to keep you long," he said. "You all know me. Well,
Most of you know me," he added with a sidelong glance at Carrot. "And I don't make speeches, but I'm sure all of you have noticed the way this Leshp business has got people all stirred up. There's a lot of loose talk about war. Well, war isn't our business. War is soldiers' business. Our business, I think, is to keep the peace. Let me show you this." He stood back and pulled something out of his pocket with a flourish. At least, that was the intention. There was a rip as something ceased to be entangled in the lining. "Damn. He produced a length of shiny black wood from the ragged pocket. There was a large silver knob on the end. The watchman craned to look.
This,
Vimes groped. "This old man turned up from the palace a couple of weeks ago, gave me this damn thing. Got a label saying, Regalia of the Watch Commander, City of Ankh-Morpork. You know they never throw anything away up at the palace." He waved it vaguely. The wood was surprisingly heavy. "It's got the coat of arms on the knob. Look." 30 watchmen tried to see. And I thought, good grief, this is what I'm supposed to carry? And I thought about it, and then I thought, no, that's right, just once someone got it right. It's not even a weapon. It's just a thing. It ain't for using, it's just for having. That's what it's all about. Same thing with uniforms. You see, a soldier's uniform is to turn him into part of a crowd of other parts all in the same uniform. But a copper's uniform is there to..." Vimes stopped. Perplexed expressions in front of him told him that he was building a house of cards with too few cards on the bottom. He coughed. "Anyway," he went on, with a glare to indicate that everyone should forget the previous 20 seconds. "Our job is to stop people fighting. There's a lot happening on the street. You've probably heard that they're starting up the regiments again. Well, people can recruit if they like, but we're not going to have any mobs. There's a nasty mood around. I don't know what's going to happen, but we've got to be there when it does." He looked around the room. "Another thing, this new Clachian envoy, or whatever he's called, is arriving tomorrow. I don't think the Assassin's Guild has anything planned, but tonight we're going to check the route the wizard's procession will be taking. A nice little job for the night shift. And tonight, we're all on the night shift." There was a groan from the watch. "As my old sergeant used to say, if you can't take a joke, you shouldn't have joined," said Vimes. "A nice gentle door-to-door inspection, shaking hands with doorknobs, giving the uniform a bit of an airing. Good old-fashioned policing. Any questions? Good. Thank you very much." There was a general rustling and relaxing among the squad as it dawned on them that they were free to go. Carrot started to clap. It wasn't the clap used by midlings to encourage underlings to applaud overlings. The palms are held at right angles to one another and flapped together rather than clapped, while the flapper stares intently at the audience as if to say, "We're going to have some applause here, or else the whole school is in detention." It had genuine enthusiasm behind it, which was somehow worse. A couple of the more impressionable new constables picked it up, and then, in the same way that little pebbles lead the avalanche, the sound of humanoids banging their hands together filled the room. Vimes glowered. "Very inspiring, sir," said Carrot, as the clapping rose to a storm. Rain poured on Ankh-Morpork. It filled the gutters and overflowed, and was then flung away by the wind. It tasted of salt. The gargoyles had crept out of their daytime shadows and were perched on every cornice and tower, ears and wings outstretched, to sieve anything edible out of the water. It was amazing what could fall on Ankh-Morpork. Rains of small fish and frogs were common enough, although bedsteads caused comment. A broken gutter poured a sheet of water down the window of Ossie Brunt, who was sitting on his bed because there were no chairs, or indeed any other furniture. He didn't mind at the moment. In a minute or two he might be very angry, and then again possibly not. It was not that Ossie was insane in any way. Friends would have called him a quiet sort who kept himself to himself, but they didn't because he didn't have any friends. There was a group of men who went to practice at the archery butts on Tuesday nights, and he sometimes went to a pub with them afterwards and sat and listened to them talk. And he'd saved up once and bought a round of drinks, although they probably wouldn't remember. Or maybe they'd say, oh, yeah, Ossie. People said that. People tended to put him out of their minds in the same way that you didn't pay much attention to empty space. He wasn't stupid. He thought a lot about things. Sometimes he'd sit and think for hours, just staring at the opposite wall, where the rain came in on damp nights, and made a map of Clatch. Someone hammered on the door.
"Mr. Brunt,"
Are you decent?
I'm a bit busy, Mrs. Spence,
he said, putting his bow under the bed with his magazines.
It's about the rent.
Yes, Mrs. Spence.
You know my rules.
I shall pay you tomorrow, Mrs. Spence,
said Ossie, looking towards the window.
Cash in my hand by noon, or it's out you go.
Yes, Mrs. Spence.
He heard her stamp downstairs again. He counted to 50 very carefully, and then reached down and pulled out his bow again. Angua was on patrol with Nobby Nobbs. This was not an ideal arrangement, but Carrot was on swing patrol, and on a night like this, Fred Colon, who kept the roster, had an uncanny knack of being on desk duty in the warm. So the spare partners had been thrown together. It was a terrible thought.
"Can I have a word, miss?"
said Nobby as they rattled doorknobs and waved their lanterns into alleyways.
"Yes, Nobby?"
"It's personal."
"Oh."
"Only I'd ask Fred, but he wouldn't understand, and I think you would understand on account of you being a woman. Most of the time, anyway. No offence, men."
"What do you want, Nobby?"
"It's about my sexual nature, miss."
Angua said nothing. Rain banged off Nobby's ill-fitting helmet.
"I think it's time I looked it full in the face, miss."
Angua cursed her graphic imagination again.
"And, how were you thinking of doing that, Nobby?"
"I mean, I sent off for stuff, miss. Creams and that."
"Creams," said Angua flatly.
"That you rub on," said Nobby helpfully.
"Rub on?"
"And a thing you do exercises with."
"Oh, gods."
"Sorry, miss?"
"What? Oh, I was just thinking of something else. Do go on. Exercises?"
"Yeah, to build up my biceps and that."
"Oh, exercises, really?"
Nobby did not appear to have any biceps to speak of. There wasn't really anything for them to be on. Technically, he had arms because his hands were attached to his shoulders, but that was about all you could say. Horrified interest got the better of her.
"Why, Nobby?"
He looked down sheepishly.
"Well, I mean, you know, girls and that."
To her amazement, Nobby was blushing.
"You mean you," she began, "you want to, you're looking for a..."
"Oh, I'm not just after, I mean, if you want a thing done properly, then, no,
said Nobby reproachfully.
"What I'm saying is, as you get older, you know, you think about settling down, finding someone who'll go with you hand in hand down life's bumpy highway."
"Why's your mouth open?" Angua shut it abruptly.
"But I just don't seem to meet girls,"
Nobby said. "Well, I mean, I meet girls, and then they rush off."
"Despite the cream?"
"Right."
"And the exercises?"
"Yes."
"Well, you've covered all the angles, I can see that," said Angua. "Beats me where you're going wrong," she sighed. "What about Stamina Thrum in Elm Street?"
"She's got a wooden leg."
"Well then, Verity Pushpram, nice girl. She runs the Clam and Cockle Barrow in Rhyme Street."
"Hammerhead? Stinks of fish all the time, and she's got a squint."
"She's got her own business, though. Does wonderful chowder, too."
"And a squint."
"Not exactly a squint, Nobby."
"Yeah, but you know what I mean."
Angua had to admit that she did. Verity had the opposite of a squint. Both eyes appeared to be endeavouring to see the adjacent ear. When you talked to her, you had to suppress a feeling that she was about to walk off in two directions. But she could gut fish like a champion. She sighed again. She was familiar with the syndrome. They said they wanted a soulmate and helpmeet, but sooner or later, the list would include a skin-like silk and a chest fit for a herd of cows. Except for Carrot. That was almost, almost one of the annoying things about him. She suspected he wouldn't mind if she shaved her head or grew a beard. It wasn't that he wouldn't notice. He just wouldn't mind. And for some reason, that was very aggravating.
"The only thing I can suggest," she said, "is that women are quite often attracted to men who can make them laugh."
Nobby brightened.
"Really?" he said. "I ought to be well in there, then."
"Good." Rain was a copper's friend. Tonight, people were making do with indoor crime. Vimes stood in the lee of one of the fountains in Sartor Square. The fountain hadn't worked for years, but he was getting just as wet as if it were in full flow. He'd never experienced truly horizontal rain before. There was no one around. The rain marched across the square like an army. Now there was an image from his youth. Funny how they hung around in the dark alleys of your brain and suddenly jumped out on you. Rain falling on water. Ah, yes. When he was a little lad, he'd pretended that the raindrops splashing in the running gutters were soldiers, millions of soldiers. And the bubbles that sometimes went floating by were men on horseback. Right now, he couldn't remember what the occasional dead dog had been. Some kind of siege weapon, possibly. Water swirled around his boots and dripped off his cape. When he tried to light a cigar, the wind blew the match out and the rain poured off his helmet and soaked the cigar in any case. He grinned in the night. He was, temporarily, a happy man. He was cold, wet, and alone, trying to keep out of the worst of the weather at 3 o'clock on a ferocious morning. He'd spent some of the best nights of his life like this. At such times you could just sort of hunch your shoulders like this, and let your head pull in like this, and you became a little hutch of warmth and peace, the rain banging on your helmet, the mind just ticking over, sorting out the world. It was like this in the old days when no one cared about the watch, and all you really had to do was keep out of trouble. Those were the days when there wasn't as much to do. But there was as much to do, said an inner voice. You just didn't do it. He could feel the official truncheon hanging heavily in the special pocket that Sybil herself had sewn in his breeches. Why is it just a bit of wood? He'd asked himself when he'd unwrapped it. Why not a sword? That's the symbol of power. And then he'd realized why it couldn't ever be a sword. Ho there, good citizen! May I ask your business this brisk morning? He sighed. There was a lantern appearing through the murk, surrounded by a halo of water. Ho there, good citizen. There was only one person in the city who would say something like that, and mean it. It's me, Captain. The halo drew nearer, and illuminated the damp face of Captain Carrot. The young man ripped off a salute, at God's damn 3 in the morning, Vimes thought, that would have brought a happy tear to the eye of the most psychotic drill sergeant. What are you doing out, sir? I just wanted to check up on things, said Vimes. You could have left it all to me, sir, said Carrot. Delegation is the key to successful command. Really, is it? Said Vimes sourly. My word, we live and learn, don't we? And you certainly learn, he added in the privacy of his head. And he was almost sure he was being mean and stupid. We've just about finished, sir. We've checked all the empty buildings, and there will be an extra squad of constables on the route, and the gargoyles will be up as high as they can. You know how good they are at watching, sir. Gargoyles? I thought we just had Constable Downspout. And Constable Pediment now, sir. One of yours? One of ours, sir. You signed... Yes, yes, I'm sure I did. Damn. A gust of wind caught the water pouring from an overloaded gutter and dumped it down Vimes's neck. They say this new island's upset the air streams, said Carrot. Not just the air, said Vimes. A lot of damn fuss over a few square miles of silt and some old ruins. Who cares? They say it's strategically very important, said Carrot, falling into step beside him. What for? We're not at war with anyone. But we might go to war to keep some damn island that's only useful in case we have to go to war, right? Oh, his lordship will have it all sorted out today. I'm sure that when moderate-mannered men of goodwill can get round a table, there's no problem that can't be resolved, said Carrot cheerfully. He is, thought Vimes glumly. He really is sure. Know much about Clatch, he said. I've read a little, sir. Very sandy place, they say. Yes, sir, apparently. There was a crash somewhere ahead of them and a scream. Coppers learned to be good at screams. There was to the connoisseur a world of difference between I'm drunk and I've just trodden on my fingers and I can't get up, and look out, he's got a knife. Both men started to run. Light blazed out in a narrow street. Heavy footsteps vanished into the darkness. The light flickered beyond a shop's broken window. Vimes stumbled through the doorway, pulled off his sodden cape, and threw it over the fire in the middle of the floor. There was a hiss and a smell of hot leather. Then Vimes stood back and tried to work out where the hell he was. People were staring at him. Dimly, his mind assembled clues. The turban, the beard, the woman's jewellery. Where did he come from? Who is this man?
Good morning, he said. Looks like there's been a bit of an accident. He raised the cape gingerly. A broken bottle lay in a pool of sizzling oil. Vimes looked up at the broken window.
Oh.
The other two people were a boy almost as tall as his father and a small girl trying to hide behind her mother. Vimes felt his stomach turn to lead. Carrot arrived in the doorway.
I lost them, he panted. There were three of them, I think. Can't see anything in this rain.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Goriff. What happened here?
Captain Carrot, someone threw a burning bottle through our window, and then this beggar man rushed in and put it out.
What did he say? What did you say? Said Vimes. You speak Clatchian.
Not very well, said Carrot modestly. I just can't get the back of the throat sound.
But you can understand what he said.
Oh, yes. He just thank you very much, by the way.
It's all right, Mr. Corriff. He's a watchman.
But you speak...
Carrot knelt down and looked at the broken bottle.
Oh, you know how it is. You come in here on a night shift for a hot caraway bun and you just get chatting. You must have picked up the odd word, sir.
Well, vindaloo maybe, but
this is a firebomb, sir.
I know, Captain.
This is very bad. Who would do a thing like this?
Right now, said Vimes. Half the city, I should think.
He looked helplessly at Goriff. He vaguely recognised the face. He vaguely recognised Mrs. Goriff's face. They were faces. They were usually at the other end of some arms, holding a portion of curry or a kebab. Sometimes the boy ran the place. The shop opened very early in the morning and very late at night, when the streets were owned by bakers, thieves and watchmen. Vimes knew the place as Mundane Meals. Nobby Nobbs had said that Goriff had wanted a word that meant ordinary, everyday, straightforward, and had asked around until he found one he liked the sound of.
Tell him you're staying here, and I'll go back to the watch-house and send someone out to relieve you, said Vimes.
Thank you, said Goriff.
Oh, you understand? Vimes felt like an idiot.
Of course you do.
You must have been here, what, 5, 6 years?
10 years, sir.
Really? Said Vimes manically. That long, really? My word, well, I'd better get along. Good morning to you. He hurried out into the rain.
I must have been going in there for years, he thought, as he splashed through the darkness, and I know how to say vindaloo and korma.
Carrot's hardly been here 5 minutes, and he gargles the language like a native.
Good grief.
I can get by in dwarfish, and I can at least say put down that rock you're under arrest in troll, but...
He stamped into the watch house, water pooling off him. Fred Colon was dozing quietly at the desk. In deference to the fact that he'd known Fred all these years, Vimes was extra noisy about taking off his cape. When he officially turned round, the sergeant was sitting at attention.
"I didn't know you were on tonight, Mr. Vimes."
"This is unofficial, Fred," said Vimes. He accepted Mr. from certain people. In an odd way, they'd earned it. "Send someone along to Mundane Meals in Scandal Alley, will you? Bit of trouble there." He reached the stairs.
"You stopping, sir?" said Fred.
"Oh, yes," said Vimes grimly. "I've got to catch up on the paperwork."